He might drop his poncho on the ground, or he might hang it from a branch as a decoy, and then he would hide and wait until the game makes its next move. So, in the presence of the magical deer, I didn't behave like either. I quickly stood on my head and began to wail softly. I actually wept tears and sobbed for such a long time that I was about to faint. Suddenly, I felt a soft breeze. Something was sniffing my hair behind my right ear. I tried to turn my head to see what it was, and I tumbled down and sat up in time to see a radiant creature staring at me. The deer looked at me, and I told him I wouldn't harm him. And the deer talked to me. Don Juan stopped and looked at me. I smiled involuntarily. The idea of a talking deer was quite incredible, to put it mildly. "He talked to me," Don Juan said with a grin. "The deer talked?" "He did." Don Juan stood and picked up his bundle of hunting paraphernalia. "Did it really talk?" I asked in a tone of perplexity. Don Juan roared with laughter. "What did it say?" I asked, half in jest. I thought he was pulling my leg. Don Juan was quiet for a moment, as if he were trying to remember. Then his eyes brightened as he told me what the deer had said. "The magical deer said, 'Hello, friend,'" Don Juan went on. "And I answered, 'Hello.' Then he asked me, 'Why are you crying?' And I said, 'Because I'm sad.' Then the magical creature came to my ear and said as clearly as I am speaking now, 'Don't be sad.'" Don Juan stared into my eyes. He had a glint of sheer mischievousness. He began to laugh uproariously. I said that his dialogue with the deer had been sort of dumb. "What did you expect?" he asked, still laughing. "I'm an Indian." His sense of humor was so outlandish that all I could do was laugh with him. "You don't believe that a magical deer talks, do you?" "I'm sorry, but I just can't believe things like that can happen," I said. "I don't blame you," he said reassuringly. "It's one of the darndest things." 9. The Last Battle on Earth. Monday, July 24th, 1961. Around mid-afternoon, after we had roamed for hours in the desert, Don Juan chose a place to rest in a shaded area. As soon as we sat down, he began talking. He said that I had learned a great deal about hunting, but I had not changed as much as he had wished. "It's not enough to know how to make and set up traps," he said. "A hunter must live as a hunter in order to draw the most out of his life. Unfortunately, changes are difficult and happen very slowly. Sometimes it takes years for a man to become convinced of the need to change. It took me years, but maybe I didn't have a knack for hunting. I think for me, the most difficult thing was to really want to change." I assured him that I understood his point. In fact, since he had begun to teach me how to hunt, I also had begun to reassess my actions. Perhaps the most dramatic discovery for me was that I liked Don Juan's ways. I liked Don Juan as a person. There was something solid about his behavior, the way he conducted himself, left no doubts about his mastery, and yet he had never exercised his advantage to demand anything from me. His interest in changing my way of life, I felt, was akin to an impersonal suggestion, or perhaps it was akin to an authoritative commentary on my failures. He had made me very aware of my failings, yet I couldn't see how his ways would remedy anything in me. I sincerely believed that in light of what I wanted to do in my life, his ways would have brought me misery and hardship. Hence, the impasse. However, I had learned to respect his mastery, which had always been expressed in terms of beauty and precision. "I have decided to shift my tactics," he said. I asked him to explain. His statement was vague, and I wasn't sure whether or not he was referring to me. "A good hunter changes his ways as often as he needs," he replied. "You know that yourself." "What do you have in mind, Don Juan?" "A hunter must not only know about the habits of his prey, he also must know that there are powers on this earth that guide men and animals and everything that is living." He stopped talking. I waited, but he seemed to have come to the end of what he wanted to say. "What kind of powers are you talking about?" I asked after a long pause. "Powers that guide our lives and our deaths." Don Juan stopped talking and seemed to be having tremendous difficulty in deciding what to say. He rubbed his hands and shook his head, puffing out his jaws. Twice he signaled me to be quiet as I started to ask him to explain his cryptic statements. "You won't be able to stop yourself easily," he finally said. "I know that you're stubborn, but that doesn't matter. The more stubborn you are, the better it'll be when you finally succeed in changing yourself." "I'm trying my best," I said. "No, I disagree. You're not trying your best. You just said that because it sounds good to you. In fact, you've been saying the same thing about everything you do. You've been trying your best for years, to no avail. Something must be done to remedy that." I felt compelled, as usual, to defend myself. Don Juan seemed to aim, as a rule, at my very weakest points. I remembered then that every time I had attempted to defend myself against his criticisms, I had ended up feeling like a fool, and I stopped myself in the midst of a long explanatory speech. Don Juan examined me with curiosity and laughed. He said in a very kind tone that he had already told me that all of us were fools. I was not an exception. "You always feel compelled to explain your acts as if you are the only man on earth who's wrong," he said. "It's your old feeling of importance. You have too much of it. You also have too much personal history. On the other hand, you don't assume responsibility for your acts. You're not using your death as an advisor. And above all, you're too accessible. In other words, your life is as messy as it was before I met you." Again, I had a genuine surge of pride and wanted to argue that he was wrong. He gestured for me to be quiet. "One must assume responsibility for being in a weird world," he said. "We are in a weird world, you know." I nodded my head affirmatively. "We're not talking about the same thing," he said. "For you, the world is weird because if you're not bored with it, you're at odds with it. For me, the world is weird because it is stupendous, awesome, mysterious, unfathomable. My interest has been to convince you that you must assume responsibility for being here in this marvelous world, in this marvelous desert, in this marvelous time. I wanted to convince you that you must learn to make every act count, since you're going to be here for only a short while. In fact, too short for witnessing all the marvels of it." I insisted that to be bored with the world, or to be at odds with it, was the human condition. "So, change it," he replied dryly. "If you don't respond to that challenge, you're as good as dead." He dared me to name an issue, an item in my life that had engaged all my thoughts. I said art. I'd always wanted to be an artist, and for years I'd tried my hand at that. I still had the painful memory of my failure. "You have never taken the responsibility for being in this unfathomable world," he said in an indicting tone. "Therefore you were never an artist, and perhaps you'll never be a hunter." "This is my best, Don Juan." "No, you don't know what your best is. I'm doing all I can. You're wrong again. You can do better. There is one simple thing wrong with you. You think you have plenty of time." He paused and looked at me as if waiting for my reaction. "You think you have plenty of time," he repeated. "Plenty of time for what, Don Juan? You think your life is going to last forever." "No, I don't." "Then, if you don't think your life is going to last forever, what are you waiting for? Why the hesitation to change?" "Has it ever occurred to you, Don Juan, that I may not want to change?" "Yes, it has occurred to me. I didn't want to change either, just like you. However, I didn't like my life. I was tired of it, just like you. Now, I don't have enough of it." I vehemently asserted that his insistence about changing my way of life was frightening and arbitrary. I said that I really agreed with him at a certain level, but the mere fact that he was always the master that called the shots made the situation untenable for me. "You don't have time for this display, you fool," he said in a severe tone. "This, whatever you're doing now, may be your last act on earth. It may very well be your last battle. There is no power which could guarantee that you are going to live one more minute." "I know that," I said with contained anger. "No, you don't. If you knew that, you would be a hunter." I contended that I was aware of my impending death, but it was useless to talk or think about it, since I couldn't do anything to avoid it. Don Juan laughed and said I was like a comedian going mechanically through a routine. "If this were your last battle on earth, I would say that you're an idiot," he said calmly. "You're wasting your last act on earth in some stupid mood." We were quiet for a moment. My thoughts ran rampant. He was right, of course. "You have no time, my friend, no time. None of us have time," he said. "I agree, Don Juan, but don't just agree with me," he snapped. "You must, instead of agreeing so easily, act upon it. Take the challenge. Change." "Just like that?" "That's right. The change I'm talking about never takes place by degrees. It happens suddenly. And you're not preparing yourself for that sudden act that will bring a total change." I believed he was expressing a contradiction. I explained to him that if I were preparing myself to change, I was certainly changing by degrees. "You haven't changed at all," he said. "That's why you believe you're changing little by little. Yet perhaps you will surprise yourself someday by changing suddenly and without a single warning. I know this is so, and thus I don't lose sight of my interest in convincing you." I couldn't persist in my arguing. I wasn't sure of what I really wanted to say. After a moment's pause, Don Juan went on explaining his point. "Perhaps I should put it in a different way," he said. "What I recommend you to do is to notice that we don't have any assurance that our lives will go on indefinitely. I've just said that change comes suddenly and unexpectedly, and so does death. What do you think we can do about it?" I thought he was asking a rhetorical question, but he made a gesture with his eyebrows, urging me to answer. "To live as happily as possible," I said.
"Right. But do you know anyone who lives happily?"
My first impulse was to say yes. I thought I could use a number of people I knew as examples. On second thought, however, I knew my effort would only be an empty attempt at exonerating myself. No, I said. I really don't.
I do, Don Juan said. There are some people.